United States Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The United States Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit is now open according to law. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Good morning and welcome to the third day of our sitting. As you know, we were supposed to be together in Miami, but obviously, the virus has forced us to handle our oral argument sessions a little bit differently, and we're conducting this one by telephone. Judges Pryor, Branch, and I are very happy to have you with us, and thank you for helping us decide and figure out these cases. There was a storm in Atlanta last night, and a lot of homes and facilities are without power. So we have a number of judges and lawyers who may be participating in today's proceedings without the benefit of a landline. So we may experience some technical difficulties or interruptions. If that happens, we will do the best we can to sort of pause proceedings and get everybody back on board. So if we encounter some of those problems, we ask you to be patient with us as we try to figure them out and get back online as quickly as possible. Ms. Tisa is going to give each of you who are arguing a two-minute warning to let you know that your time is coming to a close. Other than that, I think we are ready to begin. And our first case today is number 19-11378, United States versus Gabriel Dominguez. Mr. Cohen, whenever you're ready.
May it please the court, good morning. My name is Eric Cohen, and I represent appellant Gabriel Dominguez. This appeal raises the question left unresolved by the court in United States versus Paulson, and specifically whether the term sexual activity as contained in Title 18 U.S.C. 2422B is synonymous with the definition of sexual act contained in Title 18 Section 2246(2), which requires some form of physical contact. The court in Paulson recognized the split among the circuits concerning this issue, and we suggest that the court should adopt the Seventh Circuit's holding in Taylor that 2422B, in fact, requires some level of contact. Taylor was actually a prosecution for a violation of Section 2422B and did not deal with a sentencing enhancement, but the statutory interpretation should be the same. The court there offered several bases for its decision, including its acknowledgement that prior to 1998, there was an amendment. Before then, 2422B used the term sexual act, while 2422A used the term sexual activity. The court also noted that even after that amendment, the committee report continued to use those terms interchangeably. And the court found that the change in being from sexual act to sexual activity was simply to, according to the court, achieve semantic uniformity and did not intend to change the definition of the criminal activity. The court further noted that Section 2427, which is in the same chapter as 2422B, specifically includes production of child pornography within the definition of sexual activity. The court there noted that that definition or expansion would not have been necessary if the term sexual activity did not require physical contact. Additionally, in the provision right after 2422 statute, Section 2423, there are several different provisions there.
Mr. Cohen, can I ask you a question, please?
Sure.
The Fourth Circuit, in its Fugit decision in 2012, disagreed with the Seventh Circuit's Taylor decision. And one of the things that the Fugit court said was that the incorporation of 422B language in the guideline also brought with it the clause, you know, punishable by law or made criminal by law. And that prevented the interpretation of sexual activity from being too broad. What do you say to that contention?
Well, Your Honor, it seems like the Fourth Circuit's use of a dictionary of common usage, I think was the term that they used, raises some ambiguity as to what exactly is involved. According to Fourth Circuit, the issue, or they define sexual activity as the act of pursuit for libidinal gratification. And they specifically say that flirting would not be involved. If you read Taylor, and I'm sure the court has read Taylor, the court there used the Wikipedia definition of sexual activity where flirting would be involved and specifically includes flirting as part of the definition of sexual activity. So there is...
I mean, do you really think that... I understand that's the Wikipedia definition of it, or at least was at some point, but do you think that flirting can really be considered sexual activity?
I don't think flirting between adults can be considered sexual activity, but certain clauses or certain phrases that Mr. Dominguez used during his chats with Naomi, talking about her sexy lips, telling her how sexy she is, if that was between adults, that would be flirting. But there may be state statutes, and unfortunately I don't have one that I can tell the court right off, that similar types of conversations between an adult and a minor could be considered illegal. And that would raise the if sexual activity in 2422 expanded beyond physical contact, that could actually fall then within the purview of the statute. And again, we're not talking about a statutory violation here, but if that was the case, a person who did that would be subject to the penalty between 10 years and life. So I think that there are differences when a minor is involved. And I think that the Fourth Circuit broke why they explained that 2422 and the definition of sexual activity, I think they used the term hardly open-ended. And then they talked about limitations that it was just sexual activity. And then they narrowed it down, as Your Honor just noted, to only criminal activity. But I would think that there are very possibly some jurisdictions where a adult telling somebody under the age of 16 that she's sexy, she has sexy lips, could very well be considered criminal activity. And it may just be a misdemeanor, but as the Ninth Circuit made clear in Schill, misdemeanors fall within the ambit of 2422 also.
So how does your argument apply to what Mr. Dominguez did, which was send a picture of his private parts and then ask what the supposed minor would do with it?
Well, I think that it's important to look at that statement not only in the way that it was said, but also in the context of what came right after it. So I think the choice of Mr. Dominguez's words are significant. He did not say, what will you do with it? And more importantly, he said, he did not say anything along the lines of, would you like to do this to it? He didn't make reference to licking or stroking or any other activity. He didn't suggest to her that there was any activity that he would like for her to do with it. But I think it's also important in terms of the timing of what he said, because immediately after he asked what you do with it, he starts soliciting from her, again, naked photographs of herself. So I think within the context of the entirety of the chats, it appears, at least to me, that what he was doing was bartering, using the photograph that he sent for naked pictures of Naomi. And without meaning to be glib, it's almost like the schoolyard phraseology, I showed you mine, now show me yours. And if it's interpreted that way, or even taking a step further, the worst-case scenario is if Mr. Dominguez was suggesting to Naomi that she may want to look at the picture and then use that to gratify herself, still, and I think that is possibly as far as the comment might go, which fall way short of any kind of seeking assent to any kind of physical conduct, as we feel, or contact, I'm sorry, as we feel is required under Taylor and 2422B.
You want to take a minute to address your argument about a substantial step?
Yes, please, Your Honor. So I think it's significant that there was no conversation concerning any specific sex act at all. And Mrs. Dominguez certainly didn't ask Naomi to participate in any particular sex act. He did not offer her any gifts or inducements. He did not propose meeting with Naomi.
2 minutes, counsel, 2 minutes.
Thank you. As the government alleged in its initial objections, the contact was essentially sexually explicit conversation. He sent the photo and requested photos in between, or in return. And the Seventh Circuit, again, speaks to that issue in Gladish, which we cite. It gives multiple examples of what could be a substantial step, but then states that it requires more than explicit sex talk. And really, that's all that we have here. In Gladish, the defendant even went a step further by sending a video of himself masturbating. There was nothing like that in our case. So the court there...
Counsel?
Yes,
counsel?
Yes, Judge?
This is Lisa Branch. Let me ask you a question about that substantial step. Is your substantial step argument, it's relevant only if we agree with you that the term sexual activity means sexual act, and it requires physical contact, right?
Yes.
Okay. And so you're not suggesting that the Lee case that you're citing is binding, correct?
No, it's certainly not binding on the issue of sexual activity and what that considers or includes, because the Paulson court specifically said that that was still an open issue in this circuit.
But, Mr. Cohen, this is I didn't mean to interrupt you if you hadn't finished your answer.
I had. Thank you, Judge.
Okay. This is Jill Pryor. Do you concede that if we look to the dictionary definition showing common usage at the time, that sexual activity would not need to include contact?
No, Your Honor, because there are so many different dictionary definitions that creates an innate ambiguity. And again, going back to what I was saying before, the Wikipedia definition would include activity that would not necessarily be included in the Webster definition. So it may be dependent on what court used what dictionary at what time. And I don't think that's the way that a statute should be interpreted. I think there should be a standard definition which applies across the board to all persons so that everybody's aware of what activity falls within the purview of the statute.
Normally we say that if Congress uses two different terms in different places in a statute that it had to mean different things. Would you explain to me why you think that canon is not valid here?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question, please?
Yes, normally we say that if Congress used a different term in different places of statute, it must have meant different things. How do you respond to it? What's your answer to that canon here? Why doesn't it apply?
Well, there are so many different statutes that criminalize sexual activity, and they all include different things. So, for example, Section 2256, which is outside the chapter again, but defines sexually explicit activity, sexually explicit conduct, consistent with what the Fourth Circuit found. So different statutes contain different elements, and there's no continuity. So I don't think that canon necessarily applies in this particular case. And what I think was interesting is that the definition of sexual activity, as discussed in Fugit, seems like would also be synonymous with the definition of sexual act, So I'm not sure how the court there was able to distinguish the two in Congress's intent to say that one requires contact and the other does not. I hope I answered the court's question.
Yes, thank you.
I believe I'm out of time.
You've saved your time for rebuttal, Mr. Cohen. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Judge.
Mr. Raboso.
Good morning, and may it please the court. Manny Raboso on behalf of the United States. The district court properly applied the Section 2G2.2B5 enhancement because Mr. Dominguez's conduct satisfies the elements of 18 U.S.C. 2422B. Section 2422B criminalizes the knowing enticement of a minor to engage or attempt to engage in, quote, any sexual activity for which any person can be charged with a criminal offense, close quote. And as relevant here, the term sexual activity expressly includes the production of child pornography. That is what Mr. Dominguez did here. As the record establishes, over a series of explicit Instagram chats held over a couple days, Mr. Dominguez enticed a 9-year-old minor victim to take naked photographs of herself and to send them to him for his sexual gratification. He did so after sending her a photo of his erect penis and asking her what she would do with it, and after pleading with her to satisfy him by sending him a naked photo of herself. That conduct falls comfortably within the ambit of Section 2422B, and it properly warranted the application of the 2G2.2B5 enhancement. The appellant argues the district court improperly applied this enhancement for two reasons. That one, the sexual activity the defendant was allegedly seeking assent to did not involve physical contact, and two, he did not take a substantial step towards completing a violation of 18 U.S.C. 2422. And both of those arguments fail. First,
Mr. Raboso, in your opinion, what does the term sexual activity mean?
Well, since Congress didn't define the term sexual activity in Section 2422 or anywhere else in the United States Code, the court must then give the term sexual activity its ordinary meaning, and it must be read in context. And the Fourth Circuit's opinion in Fugit directly speaks to this. Section 2422B does not criminalize the enticement of sexual activity, full stop. Rather, it's limited in two critical aspects. And first, it concerns only conduct that's already criminally prohibited. And that's why it says any sexual activity for which any person can be charged with a crime. And second, it addresses only behavior involving children. So those two limitations plainly define the term. Sexual activity is conduct that, number one, is a violation of either a state or a federal statute that has to do with sexual conduct. And the Fourth Circuit in Fugit defined it as libidinal gratification on the part of any individual, and two, it must involve a minor. So sexual activity, the Fourth Circuit's rationale in Fugit really defines the term and doesn't limit it. It says any sexual activity. So that broad and encompassing term states it could be anything, whether it involves contact or it doesn't involve physical contact. It doesn't have any limitation of that sort. And two, there must be, and that's why, and I should take a step back, the term itself is defined by what the state or the federal statute the government is relying on to charge that any particular defendant. It's actually one of the elements of the offense. So in this court's pattern jury instructions for 2422B, whether it's a substantive charge or it's the attempt, the government must identify a state or a federal statute that the conduct is a criminal violation of, and further must describe what that statute does indeed penalize. So the plain definition of sexual activity within 2422B is conduct that anybody could be charged with, and depending on what the government alleges is a criminally prohibited conduct, the state or federal statute will describe what the sexual activity is. And Fugit's rationale in reaching its conclusion that, number one, Taylor is rejected, it's not limited to sexual activity that only has physical conduct, and it's not synonymous with a sexual act. Instead, it comprises conduct connected with the active pursuit of libidinal gratification on the part of any individual. And I think that that's where Taylor missed the point when they looked at the term sexual activity within a vacuum and didn't read it in context. The context of 2422B just plainly defines what that term means.
Okay, we'll go with Judge Pryor first, then Judge Branch, and then me. So Judge Pryor.
Judge Posner points out in Taylor that you could have a very low-level misdemeanor offense under state law, which, when directed at a child, would then invoke the 10-year minimum under federal law. What's your response to that concern?
So Congress,
in other words, that the criminal prohibition might not be much of a safeguard.
Sure. So, you know, that was brought up in Taylor, the court's concern with, you know, 2422B carrying this 10-year minimum mandatory sentence up to life. But realistically, there are different components of the statute and there are different elements. Congress, their intention was to criminalize any sexual activity when it comes to minors and the enticement of minors. They took that extremely seriously, and there has to be a use of interstate commerce and in most instances. And what they've recognized is the rapid use of the internet. You know, this statute was enacted in 1998, and fast forward to 2020, just about everything is done from the palm of your hand on a, you know, on a cell phone or on a computer. And slowly enough, the minimum mandatory has increased throughout the years from when it was enacted. And that's because Congress has expressly recognized that this element of interstate commerce, these child predators, that they could, from anywhere, from the palm of their hand to a computer, can entice these children. And Congress expressly wanted to do that. So if there's a state statute that is a misdemeanor otherwise, Congress has recognized, look, there's completely disparate sentences throughout state courts for different types of sexual activity when it comes to, you know, a sexual battery statute, or it could be a lewd and lascivious exhibition statute. It could be varying. But what we want to make crystal clear is that when it comes to a sexual enticement of a minor using interstate commerce, we're going to punish this. So if they're just by happenstance, there is a misdemeanor statute, which is what the government relied on in Taylor. I believe it was an Indiana misdemeanor statute. You know, in the state of Florida, I believe a similar conduct would be a felony, a second-degree felony, which would be a lewd and lascivious exhibition before a minor. So there is that discrepancy in what the statutes have throughout the states, and Congress has expressly said, We're going to have a penalty that if you use interstate commerce, if you use this, you know, the rapidly expanding internet to entice minors, which is where the majority of them happen, versus in person, it's usually in a custodial relationship, and those are not as often as the ones that we see today and have been seeing since the 90s when this was enacted. The fact that Congress has expressly said, we're going to take this seriously, and we're going to punish it seriously. I hope that answered your question.
Yeah, Judge Branch?
Counsel, yes. If we were to agree with you that in defining the term sexual activity, it is not limited to situations involving sexual contact, or as you have indicated, there's that other step, what criminal offense would the sexual activity violate in this case? And has the district court established that?
So the district court, when it went through the analysis and it went through the chats that were described and it's in the record, you know, there's no dispute as to the facts of this case. You know, the defendant, he sent on two different occasions, he sent a photo of his penis to this young girl. On the second occasion, his erect penis, he asked her what she would do with it. He asked for photos in return, and he received photos. So the court did not expressly state this is a violation of this particular state statute or this federal statute. But, you know, the record is clear that there are, first off, the fact that 18 U.S.C. 2427 expressly includes the production of child pornography within the meaning of any sexual activity for which a person could be charged with a crime. The government contends that at a minimum there was an enticement to produce child pornography because there was a point in time where after he had consistently been asking her for a nude photo in return, she had been sending clothed photos and he had been having sexually suggestive comments. You have sexy lips. You're cute. Can I tell you something? You make me very hard. And it got to a point where when he sent her the photo of his erect penis, he asked her, are you alone? She said it was too dark. That's where the enticement begins. That's where the persuasion begins for him to persuade her to commit the federal offense of production of child pornography. She goes to the bathroom.
Well, but counsel, as you conceded, the district court did not expressly state which statute was violated. Do we need to, even if we agree with you on your definition of sexual activity, do we need to remand this case to the district court to finish its analysis of Section 2422B?
No, and the reason why is because this court can affirm on any basis for which it finds support on the record, and I think the record is clear that what Dominguez did in this case, that he did engage, that he did, in, you know, attempted to entice this minor to produce child pornography, and when he sent the photo of his erect penis and asked her what she would do with it, it was clear. Another thing has to do with
So if you think we can affirm without any remand, if we agree with your statutory interpretation analysis, what federal or state statute did Mr. Dominguez's transmissions violate for purposes of the guideline and 2422B?
So for purpose of the guideline expressly states the different statutes that can be violated. Within that is 2242, and then you have 2251A, which is the production of child pornography, which by incorporation through 2427, any sexual activity for which a crime can be charged, that includes production of child pornography. So Mr. Dominguez received two nude photos of this 9-year-old girl because he persuaded her to do so. That is not in dispute. We don't know what those photos have, but the context of those communications, he asks her, she sends a partially nude photo. And then in response, and please excuse my language, but it's what Mr. Dominguez asked her, was that your pussy? And she said, I'm half naked. And he said, can you please send a fully naked photo? And she said, why? And he said, this one time for me. I'm kind of paraphrasing that part, but this one time for me. And she sends him a photo. He said, thanks, and damn. At a minimum,
but we don't have the photo. Which ones of those photos do we have? We don't have any.
We don't have any nude photos, and I addressed that in one of my footnotes, and it's in the sentencing. It's from the sentencing where the prosecutor described that in the Instagram business records, when you upload a photo or when you're chatting on Instagram on the Instagram app, if you have a photo that you previously took on your camera roll, and you send somebody a photo by accessing your camera roll, that will be preserved. So that's why we only have one photo of Mr. Dominguez's penis, which is the first one that he sent her when that came from the camera roll, which you could tell. But then at the time that they're actually having this sexual conversation where they're exchanging photos, he's telling her how hard he is, and he says, do you want to see? And he sends her a photo of the erect penis. We don't have that because that when you take a contemporaneous photo, when you take a photo using the Instagram app, which has a camera within it, Instagram does not store that image. So you have a contemporaneous photo that Dominguez took of his erect penis when he was looking at her photos, and then you have the two nude photos that this minor sent. We don't know what – we don't have those photos, but we do have the context, and – specifically, she admitted or she said that I was half nude. He asked if it was her genitalia. He asked for a fully nude photo because he wasn't sexually satisfied at that time. And 18 U.S.C. 22. Yes.
2 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you. And 2256 that identifies what child pornography is, and it says sexually explicit conduct. But you know, sexually explicit conduct means actual stimulated lascivious exhibition of the anus, genitals, or pubic area of any person, and it excites the sexual desires or is salacious, and the focus is on the intent of the producer. So, Mr. Dominguez, you have a photo of this young girl. We don't know what pose she's in or any of that information, but what we do know is the intent of the producer. And let's not forget the court. This was the second time the district court had Mr. Dominguez before him. And the 404B evidence shows that he previously was convicted in 2008 of this same exact behavior of online conversations with a minor, sending a video of masturbation. So, and that's within the record itself. I'm not going to get into if what the district court was thinking, but clearly the intent of Mr. Dominguez was to entice this minor, and like I said, one is the production of child pornography at a minimum. He persuaded her to produce child pornography, if not actually completed the act. And second, there is a state statute. There's two of them. You have lewd or lascivious conduct, which is Florida Statute 800.04, subsection 6, or 800.04, subsection 7. One is lewd and lascivious conduct, and the other one is lewd or lascivious exhibition. Both of those are second-degree felonies. One involves solicitation of a person under 16 years of age to commit a lewd or lascivious act. And then the other one has to do with any person who intentionally masturbates or exposes his genitals in a lewd or lascivious manner in the presence of a victim who is less than 16 years of age. So that's him sending the photo of his erect penis, asking her what she would do with it. The full context of Mr. Dominguez's conversations with this 9-year-old girl, and he knew that she was 9 years old, it comfortably falls within the ambit of 2422B. It is a violation of a state and a federal law. He persuaded this minor to produce child pornography. The fact that it's a sentencing enhancement, the burden of proof is lower. So when you look at the circumstantial evidence regarding the photographs that were sent, clearly you could see that Mr. Dominguez, and this is not in dispute, he received photographs of this girl, which he persuaded her to take of herself nude, his own sexual pleasure. And looking at the focus of the producer, Mr. Dominguez, clearly this falls within the definition of child pornography within 18 U.S.C. 2256.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Rebozo.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Cohen, you have your rebuttal time available.
I would like to start my remarks with the last thing that the government said, because the government relied on the fact that Mr. Dominguez received photographs, one without knowing the content of the photograph. Even assuming that they were nude photographs does not necessarily mean that they were lewd and lascivious. But more important, one of the nuances between the guideline and the statute is that the guideline in the commentary specifically provides that sexual abuse or exploitation does not include possession, accessing with intent to view, receipt, or trafficking in material relating to the sexual abuse or exploitation of a minor. Again, we don't believe that there's anything more than the receipt of the photograph and sending the photograph of himself to Naomi. The other comment that I'd like to make,
Mr. Cohen, let me ask you a hypothetical, please. If the photograph that Mr. Dominguez received from the purported minor included a video of the minor engaging in individual sexual activity, for example, masturbation, would that satisfy the guideline?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, because it would still be the receipt of images of child pornography. So material relating to the sexual abuse or exploitation of a minor, certainly asking the minor to masturbate as part of a pornographic image, I think falls within the exclusion in the guideline. I mean, it's the receipt or trafficking of material relating to sexual abuse or exploitation of a minor. I think that would certainly fall within that definition.
All right, thank you.
The one final point I'd like to make, only because it wasn't addressed in the briefs, which I apologize to the court or in any of the other cases we've discussed this morning, is the similarity between 2422 and 2423A. 2423A uses language very similar to what's contained in 2422B. But there were three other provisions in 2423, all of which deal with illicit sexual conduct, which includes the production of child pornography specifically. The penalties for violating 2423A are significantly more serious than for 2423B through D, which we feel indicates that the definition of sexual activity in A is more narrow than the definition of illicit sexual conduct in B through D. So returning to the point made in Taylor, it would not have been necessary to include child pornography in the definition of illicit sexual conduct if sexual activity included child pornography. There wouldn't have been any need to distinguish between the two terms. So the fact that Congress, in the same chapter as the statute that we're discussing, expanded the definition of the conduct to include child pornography as part of illicit sexual conduct in the same statute where there's reference to sexual activity, suggests that sexual activity has a narrower definition and is more consistent with the definition in 2246B. Or 2246-2. I have nothing else unless the court has any questions of me.
No, thank you very much, Mr. Cohen and Mr. Rebozo. We appreciate your help with this case.
Thank you, Your Honor.